Everybody, hello, hello, hello. This is Marna Gatlin, your fearless leader from Parents Via Egg Donation. So tonight we are doing our very first webinar that we are super excited about. PVET is presenting Telling Kids Their Story. This is sponsored by Parents Via Egg Donation and Advanced Fertility Center of Chicago. And Carol Lieber-Wilkins, who is our mental health director of PVED, is like the most perfect person to kick off our series of webinars, and she's going to talk to us about telling kids their story. And Carol has been, oh my goodness, she's been my guru, she's been my mentor, and she's been a part of PVED for a very long time. She's been telling kids their stories and helping parents through all kinds of third-party stuff for years and years and years, and we are just absolutely so incredibly happy that she's here to do her thing tonight. So a few housekeeping things. We would like you to submit any questions using the chat feature to the right of GoToMeeting. They'll be visibly publicly, and we will be answering them in a Q&A session at the end of the presentation. We will take as many questions as time allows. So this presentation is being recorded in its entirety and may be used in public marketing materials in the future. So logging in, if you have a nickname, that would be great. If not, it's all good. And we are ready to go. And Carol, I'm going to give it to you, and I'm happy that you're here. Thank you.
So wonderful. Thank you so much, Marna. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining me for our first webinar. It's really exciting that we're finally able to do this, and I thought that I would start with the topic that is probably the question that we get asked most often. I've been doing this work for almost 30 years, and this is probably the thing that people have the most anxiety about. And so what I like to do, as Marna says, is take the scary out of it, because to me it's one of the most exciting aspects of parenting, period, and parenting through egg or embryo donation specifically. It certainly has been for me in my own family. So we're going to get started, and that's just a little information about me. So I wanted to start just by showing that there have been a number of studies about families conceived through egg and sperm donation, and Susan Gollenbach is a social worker in Great Britain, is probably the most well-known. She did a study in 2009, and it was absolutely no surprise to any of us that what she discovered is that the age of disclosure is one of the most important characteristics of telling the story that affects how donor-conceived individuals feel about their donor conception. So what I want to let you know getting started is that this presentation is going to focus on starting to tell the story to very young children. I'm going to say very young children means probably anything under the age of 6 or 7, but mostly focusing even younger than that. If you are the parents of children conceived through donor conception who are older than that, please do not panic and don't leave. There's a limitation to how much we can cover this evening, but I want you to know that there's plenty of support. Your family's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. I'm available to help. There are people in your area that are available to help. But this is just going to focus really on talking with younger children about donor conception. So recommended is to start when children are very young. And very young really means what I generally recommend is that parents start practicing and rehearsing their story when they're pregnant or when they bring their child home. So immediately upon birth, if you don't give birth, whenever you bring your child home or when you're actually pregnant. So obviously, children don't understand this story for a very long time. Why do we start so early? Well, practice doesn't make perfect unless you're trying to get to Carnegie Hall. But repetition can make you much more comfortable with the story. And the more comfortable you are with the story and the language that you use, that's going to be communicated to your children. And what they will remember is the feeling that they have while you're telling the story, not necessarily the words or the mechanics. Oops. So again, if you begin these conversations while your child is in utero or at birth, it gives you a chance to feel all the feelings that can come up before our children are really cognizant or aware. When they're pre-verbal, we can have all kinds of feelings. We can cry and we can scream and we can laugh and we can, you know, keep adapting the story, and our kids really don't know. Because, of course, for most of us, our families were built initially because we experienced a loss of our genetics. And sometimes when we're telling this story, at least in the very beginning, when kids are really, really young, we can have a lot of feelings that come up about that. And I certainly remember that myself, that even though I was very ready to be a parent to children that were not genetically related to me and I had done my psychological homework, I remember talking to them when they were infants and having a moment where I felt like, I don't want to be talking about this other person. I don't want to be talking about a birth mother or an egg donor. I just want to be regular like everybody else. But if we can just acknowledge that feeling and tap ourselves on the shoulder and say, well, thanks for sharing that, and then move on and realize that it doesn't mean anything except that this is a process. Process that changes over time. It doesn't mean we made a mistake. It doesn't mean we don't love our children. It means we had a feeling. And the more we can acknowledge that, especially when our kids are really young, the more prepared we'll be when they get older. So kids are very concrete. Anybody who has a young child under the age of middle grammar school knows that children are very concrete. They don't develop abstract thinking until really almost pre-adolescence. And so we want to keep the story very simple. In the beginning, it was a very simple story, and this is the story of how we all came together. Now notice, this is not a story of like, we're going to tell you, child, how you were donor conceived, which singles you out as being somehow different, or that you were born differently, which they're not, or conceived differently. This is a story of us as a family. Even if your family is a family of two with one parent and one child, it's still a story of how we all came together. So it's not just the child's story, it's our family story. And that story is that we, or I, if you're single, very much wanted a child. If you had secondary infertility, it's a story that you very much wanted to add to your family or wanted another child. But it takes apart from a man and apart from a woman to make the beginnings of a child, of a baby. And so we were missing the part that mommy needed. And in some cases, we also were missing a part that daddy needed, or if there's no daddy, we were certainly missing the man's part. And so it's basically like a construction project. Part A and part B equals part C. So we needed help because we needed one of those parts or both of those parts. So we asked for help. And what this does is it starts very early teaching a value to our children that it's okay to need help. It's okay to ask for help. And in fact, if you need help and you ask for help, people will actually help you. And this is a wonderful value to teach our children. So we needed help. We asked for help. We went to the doctor and we said, doctor, doctor, we need a part for a man or a woman because I'm missing my part. And the doctor said, I can help you. And so a man or a woman helped us by giving me or us the part that we needed so you could be our little Johnny or our little Susie. And we are so glad that the donor and or the surrogate gave us what we needed so that you could be our son or daughter. And we're a family, yay, with our dog Spot and Mommy and Uncle Joe and Susie, and we love you so much. And that's pretty much the story initially. So again, when we start early, it gives us a chance to figure out the language that we want to use. So I know when I was telling the story of donor conception to my children, I used the term, the lady who gave us what we needed so that you could be mine. And that's really long and it's really awkward, but I didn't know her name. And for whatever reason, I didn't use the word donor. Some people like the word donor, some people like the word helper, because children do understand that when you collect all their old toys and clothes and donate them to a shelter, that's donating. So that can be a little confusing. And so, but all children understand what it means to be a good helper. So you might say the man who helped us, the woman who helped us, or the donor, the helper. And if you know the helper's name, by all means, use it. Because this helps to personalize the experience in a way that says the part that we were given, it was not like a disembodied egg. It came from a human being. And ultimately, we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute, but ultimately this is the goal, is to help our children create a healthy genetic identity. And they do that by understanding that what we're really doing is creating new forms of kinship. We're not just making ourselves mothers and fathers, or giving ourselves a baby, we're actually creating forms of kinship in the world to other human beings who also have kin. So again, getting back to language, I was very technical. I used to say ovum and uterus because there was a family story that I grew up with, that one of my siblings was very upset when my mother was pregnant and she was eating a meal and he thought all the food was plopping on the baby's head, because we typically say babies grow in women's tummies, right? And I didn't use the word egg because eggs are something you scramble in the morning for breakfast. But people have all kinds of ways to refer to all these parts and all these people. Marna frequently tells the story that she referred to the donor as Nell, which stood for nice egg lady. So it was a way of kind of naming her and identifying her before they actually knew her name. Some people use the word seed. So starting early gives you a lot of years to keep, you know, practicing and changing it and fumbling over it and figuring out what you're comfortable with. So helper, again, is understood by very young children, and I already talked about donating kind of has multiple meanings, and eggs are something you eat in the morning. But ultimately, our kids are going to find their own way to understand what we're talking about, and they will. As you will hear in a moment, when you hear my own son, Daniel, who is now 29 years old, and he tells a little story about how I used very technical language, but his dad one day just told him that it was kind of like needing, like a car needing all its parts to run. So here's Daniel telling us about that.
I remember the story my dad used to tell me about the car. That we had no engine, and that we were able to get an engine from someone else, just kind of breaking it down into palatable terms for a kid. And you also did similar things where I think you used more more of the scientific terms, and that was great as well, because it sort of brought together the knowledge and the kind of abstract of the knowledge, so that when you grow up, you kind of you have all this information already, so it's not really a surprise. You know, if you keep using in terms of car, it's going to be, it doesn't sort of transition. But I feel like knowing about both was helpful.
So as you can tell, he, you know, we started with the very basic, and his father gave him an example, you know, very male oriented, right? I never in my life would have thought to use an analogy of a car that needs an engine to run, but that is really what kind of clicked for him when he was about 5 years old. So we want to always tell the truth, but we don't necessarily tell the whole truth every time. And what that means is we're not going to tell a three-year-old that we had premature ovarian failure and we went to the doctor after crying for a really long time and the doctor referred us to an agency and then we paid a certain amount of money after locating a donor and how we select, you know, we want to sort of unroll this story at developmental stages. So when a question is asked of us, we want to make sure that we have some understanding of the question that is asked and answer that question without over-talking and or over-sharing. Some people have a problem talking about this at all, but others of us may be so anxious and interested in telling the story that we tell too much of the story all at once. But it's okay. It all ends up being fine in the end, because these are lifelong conversations. So again, young children are going to remember being held. They're going to remember the quiet when you tell the story, or the humor, and the love, the gratitude that you express toward the donor, the person that helped, and the affection and the warmth and how wanted and loved they are. So reproductive technology is definitely not the point of this story. Our kids do not need to understand in vitro fertilization at all. And in fact, that comes quite a bit later. The point to having these conversations is to help our children create a healthy, true, and genuine identity, which includes genetic identity, as well as all of the other people in their lives who contribute to who they are and who they will become. So we form our image of who we are based on the family that we grow up in, as well as our genetic makeup. And when those two are not the same thing, we need some assistance to understand what pieces we may get from where. And which is the reason for telling the truth and giving children the information so they can create a healthy identity. So in order to do that, we want to focus on the donors as real people. They are not their eggs or their sperm. The woman who may have given you her ova is a person with a family, with parents and grandparents and siblings. And at this point in time, she may, in fact, if she didn't already, have her own children. She has helped to create other families out there. She may love volleyball. She may love science. She's a real person. She is not just her eggs. So they have names and faces. Even if we don't know what that is. They have extended family, and even though I know that sometimes it's very hard for families of egg donation to think about this, our children, and therefore we, are connected to those extended families through our children forever. We may never meet them. We may never know them, but we are definitely connected to them. And that's the point of putting everything together to form an identity. We're all really connected to the larger family tree. And sort of to state the obvious, donor conception is harder to talk about than adoption, because in adoption you have an actual birth family. You almost definitely know their names. It's always an open adoption unless it's international. And so you can say that, you know, John and Susie had a relationship and created you, and you came out of Susie's body, and we were there, and blah, 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 blah. But of course, you know, egg and sperm are microscopic, which makes it really hard to talk about with concrete thinkers. So that's why we need to ultimately, you know, build the ladder or the pyramid to helping our children understand the connection to the person and not the seed. By the way, I love the quote at the top of this slide, out of chaos comes a dancing star, which is so true for our families, right? At one time when our infertility was diagnosed, we probably felt like we were, you know, completely thrown into crisis and chaos and didn't know where to turn or what to do. And now we have families and we have our children, and they are our dancing stars. So it's important to remember that you don't have to have all the answers ever, ever. Not when you're pregnant, not when your baby is an infant, and not when they're 29 and you're still having these conversations. So you're not going to have a lot of the answers to some of the questions your children may eventually ask. And when I say eventually, many of these questions actually were asked by children conceived through egg donation as young as 4 or 5 up to about 6 or 7 years old. So when you have these conversations on the table and you're talking about them all the time, these questions will come up. Often when you least expect it, and you may or may not have the answers to the questions. So it's really important that, one, you try to discern what it is your child is asking, and two, it is way more important how you embrace the questions than it is to have answers to the questions, because your child wants to know, can we talk about this? Can I ask you any question? Are you going to freak out? Is this a topic that's okay? And so, for example, the most basic, because all people have names, right? So your child might ask at some point, what was her name? And you may not know. If you did egg donation in a setting where it was very, very anonymous, you might only know that she was donor 432. And so again, remember, tell the truth, but not necessarily the whole truth. And this is your opportunity to engage in fantasy with your child and find out, what are they thinking? So you can say, I don't know her name. What would you like to name her? And that actually happened with my son, because I was using this really long term, you know, the lady who gave me what I needed so you could be mine. And Daniel just thought, he was about 6, and he thought and he thought, and he came up with the name of a female character from one of his favorite television shows. And so for the next couple of years, until we actually did get to be in a relationship with the woman who had given me the eggs, that's what we named her. And so I could dump that terrible, awkward phrase I was using, and we could just call her by the name that he made up. And it doesn't matter whether that was the right name. So they might say, can she come over? You know, can I meet her someday? If you had what is known as an anonymous donation, which is probably most people out there, please don't just say, no, I don't know who she is. Because the reality is, you don't know the answer to that question. Things have changed so, so, so much in the last 20, 25 years, in the last 10 years. And previously so-called anonymous donations have become not anonymous over time, and people are finding each other and meeting and matching. And of course, DNA testing is as easy as spitting into a little tube. And the reality is, you don't know the answer. So that kind of a question can be maybe someday. Whatever it is you need, we will help you. So again, you are your child's best advocate. And even if it freaks you out right now, and even if you don't think you're ever going to want to meet this person, it doesn't really matter, because in that moment, again, they're reading your cues. And if you say, no, you can never meet them, I don't know who they are, that is going to stick so much more than if you leave that door open and you help your child to believe that you're their advocate and you're going to help them with whatever it is they need. And then you can engage in fantasy again. You know, if they say, can she come over for dinner or, you know, Sunday lunch? You can say, well, what would that be like? And before you know it, you don't really have to answer the question, yes or no, but they might say, well, it would be cool. We can put out our really pretty china and then she can go home. So, you know, they're not looking for her to move in. They're not looking for a mother. They're just intrigued and play acting kind of what that would be like. She's kind of like a distant friend or cousin or relative that that they've never met at that point. And eventually they may ask a question about, does she have any children? And you might say, yes, I have a photograph whenever you would like to see it. One of the most frequently asked questions of donor-conceived individuals is if the parents have a photograph of the donor. And that's really what that should say there. And so, you know, you're not running and getting it right in that moment. You're answering the question, yes, I do have a photograph. And whenever you'd like to see it, we will sit down and look at it together. So again, you're not going to necessarily just hand it off to a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 4-year-old or whatever, but they know that it's available, it's accessible, it's not being withheld. And then if you look at it together, all kinds of great conversations can happen. And then there's my favorite, that was the only question in all the years that my son asked that completely flummoxed me. I was completely unprepared for it, which is, how did they get the sperm out of daddy to get it inside of you? Because he knew there was a medical procedure involved. And I'm going to leave it to your imagination to think about how you would answer that question. So these conversations are going to take place over and over again, often in the most unlikely places. They often happen while you're driving carpool in a rainstorm with a car full of other kids. It's okay to be flustered. And it's really okay to say, let me think about that. Or why don't we talk about that when we get home? You're not always going to be prepared for it. You're not always going to be the one to initiate. And what you want to do, because children are not going to come up to you and say, by the way, did you use an egg donor to have me or to conceive me? That's not going to happen. You know, very frequently parents will say things like, well, you know, we'll tell them when they ask. Well, this is not a question that gets asked. So what you want to do is look for opportunities to talk about families that come together in all kinds of ways. There are two dad families and two mom families and one parent families, and there are children raised by grandparents, and there are multiracial families. And what you want to do is look in your own community and find perhaps there's a family where the child is of a different race than one or both of the parents. And you might say, most people who are born to their families, you know, look alike, but that's a family that may have been formed by adoption. So there are families of adoption, and there are kids who are raised in this particular way. We all came together in this way because someone gave me that part. You can also look for adoption stories and weave your way into donor conception through that way. Every Disney story is an adoption story. Some of them are pretty horrendous, losing parents. But in fact, that's actually how I developed my career and talking about this issue is because I became a parent by adoption first, and I had two very, very young children, very close in age, and I was reading a book about adoption to my kids, one on each side of me, and there were no books about donor conception at that time, not a single one, because egg donation was unheard of when I did it. And so I, you know, turned to my younger son and I said, and that's sort of kind of how I had you. It was sort of kind of like an adoption. And he was probably a year old at the time. And so I could fumble and be flustered and, you know, start figuring it out from there, because it is a genetic adoption. And so, you know, you want to look for opportunities to talk about this. Also, buy the books. You're so fortunate right now. There are lots and lots and lots of books about egg donation in particular, and even embryo donation. And so you want to buy a lot of them, even if you don't like them, donate them to your library. But just keep them on the shelf and pull them out and have your kid pull them out, and it gives you like a template, and then you can fill in your own blanks. So speaking of books, this is a woman named Sasha. She's 23 years old, and she is the donor-conceived daughter of a colleague of mine, a therapist who also does this work. She's going to talk about how books were used in her understanding her story. By the way, her story is a little bit different in that they had what's known as a known donor or directed donor. The woman was known to the family. It was not anonymous. So here's Sasha. Let's see, where's that?
So I can't really recall any moment in which my parents sat me down and said, Sasha, this is our family situation, and this is who your egg donor is. Let's go meet her in a very formal way. It was never like that. It was always very open, very normal. And I think for that reason, I can't recall any moment in which I was sort of emotionally distressed by the situation that I had with my family.
So there's her talking about, again, how she doesn't remember a particular point in time where she learned it. She just always knew. So here's the second most often asked question to me and my colleagues, and I know to Marna, which is, what do I do? I'm terrified that someday my child is going to say, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my real mother anyway. At which point I always tell people and they get horrified, well, you should expect that. You should expect that. Because when children and adolescents become angry, they will say anything to get what they want. So one of our jobs as parents via donor conception is to ultimately help our kids distinguish between family building issues and regular developmental family issues. All kids get angry and lash out, and most of us listening to this probably at some point yelled and screamed at our parents because we weren't allowed to do something we wanted to do, and they'll use whatever they think is going to get them what they want. So it's not uncommon for a teenager to say, I don't have to listen to you because I'm 14 and I know everything. Or I don't have to listen to you because you're stupid. Or Johnny's mother lets him, but, you know, you're so strict. Or because you're too old and you don't understand. So you can just plug in the not my real mother story for any of these other things. And now you will be armed with a script to respond to it. It won't be so terrifying. And it will also really, really help your child, one, know that it's not going to work, so they'll never use it again. And two, it will help them separate out regular developmental issues from family building issues. So what you say is, you know that if you have questions about how we built our family, we are always available to you. But right now, you need to get back into your room and clean it because that's what I asked you to do, or you need to take that short skirt off because you're not leaving the house in it. And it's over, and they'll never use it again because it didn't work, and you didn't fall apart into a puddle of tears. So you help clarify all of that for them. So this is Nicholas. This is Marna Gatlin's son. And Marna is asking him for, during a video, is asking him, what does he want families via egg donation to know? What is his guidance? Sorry.
What would you like this audience to know about donor egg families?
As long as you tell your kids early and don't really make a big deal of it, they don't care at all. It's not a big deal to me that I'm an egg donor kid. If I got told, like, now for the first time, that would probably freak me out. But it's the same as, like, kids who were adopted. You know, if they find out they're adopted later, then that freaks you out. But it's, you know, just be open about it.
So there you have it. Now, not everybody's going to feel that way, but this is just an example from, you know, three of the eldest egg donor conceived individuals that we know that are all kind of giving the same message. So you may have fears about comments from others. Sometimes people say, but if I tell my very young child, they're going to run to school, they're going to tell all their classmates, their parents will know. And to that, really, what I want to say is that every exposure to any comments or questions is an opportunity for you to talk with your kids. Every time it comes up somewhere in any way is a learning and a growth opportunity. But it certainly is a reason that we need to do our homework first and be okay with the choices that we made, so that when or if anything occurs, you can stand strong and be the strong tree trunk while our kids are blowing in the wind, more or less. And I will tell you that almost every parent I've spoken to that has children donor-conceived who are older will say they've really never had a negative comment from other people. It's very rare. Oops, sorry. So with or without information about the donor, we can talk to our children about the unique way that we built our family and think about these conversations as your child's natural curiosity, the way they're curious about everything, like how high is up and where does the moon go when it's daytime or the sun go when it's nighttime. It's all part of the same package of curiosity. And this empowers us to know our children in a deeper way. And it builds trust so that they know that they can always trust you to tell the truth, which will build a lasting and sustaining, wonderful and deep relationship with them. So in closure, here is Daniel again with his final words of wisdom.
I would say I'm a pretty typical guy, and if it's any evidence for kind of the process and whether or not to tell your kids and be open and honest with them, I guess use me as a kind of a maybe a benchmark of some sorts for how to just not make such a big deal out of it. You know, you could write a million books about it and do all that stuff, and it's definitely helpful. And I don't come to this from the perspective of a parent. And I can imagine that's a lot more stressful and involved and all that stuff. But from the receiving end, if you're open and honest and you, you were truthful with your kids and don't lie and share, you know, your feelings and all that stuff, I think you're good.
Out of the mouths of babes. So I want to thank you all for joining me very, very much, and I really look forward to your questions and comments. And this is my philosophy about parenting in general. You've probably already discovered this, that just about the time you think you've got it all figured out, they'll change the questions.
Okay. Thank you so, so much, Carol.
You're very
welcome. That was wonderful, wonderful. It was a home run, as always. And again, this was Parents Via Egg Donation presents Telling Kids Their Story, sponsored by Parents Via Egg Donation and a generous partnership with Advanced Fertility Center of Chicago, Dr. Chabon. So it's question time. We've got about 20 minutes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the questions I've received, and I'm going to ask Carol. And this is my favorite part because Carol and I like to talk. So I'm going to ask her questions, and she's going to answer them. And if I have follow-up questions to her question, I'll ask. And so on the right-hand side of your screen, you will see chat. Just go ahead and ask your questions, and they'll come through me, and we'll go from here. So Carol, what's coming in is all kinds of messages to me. Carol is fantastic. She's a rock star. So take a bow. You did a great job. Debbie wrote, we have pictures and donor profiles. We're wondering about sharing pictures, and is the impact regarding the same, and when should we share those profiles with our child?
Well, again, I think a lot of this is going to arise based on the questions that your child is asking you. I wish I knew how old Debbie's children were, but as long as you're talking about it, you're going to get questions, and then you can respond to the questions. So again, if your child asks, do you have a picture of her, you can say, yes, we do, and when you're ready, we can look at it together. So the idea is you never want your child to feel like you're withholding information. That's the worst feeling in the world for any of us. You want it to be like the cookie jar that you set in front of them, and it's full of cookies, and they can just walk by and take a few whenever they want to, rather than putting it way up high on a shelf and making it inaccessible. So I would say, as far as the picture goes, because pictures are very concrete, that I would play it by ear based on whether or not they ask about a photograph. And if they don't ask about a photograph, it's really fine to leave it in your file cabinet and just wait it out. Just be patient. At some point, they probably will. The same is true for the profile. Now, the profile is interesting because some of the other questions that kids may ask from time to time, you know, kids are interested in donors not because they might need a kidney someday, but because they're trying to put together the pieces about what they may have gotten from that donor. So they might ask a question like, what was that lady's favorite color? Or did she like basketball too? Because I love basketball. And that's when you can say, you can either answer the question if you know, but if you don't remember and you think it might be on the profile, you can actually say, you know, we have some information about her, and I can get it, and we can sit down and look at it, and maybe the answer is there. So you don't want it to be like top secret CIA, FBI kind of stuff, where it's hidden away in a safe deposit box, but it can be useful. Chances are, until your child is way, way into adolescence, they're not going to ask to actually see a profile. They don't know what that is or why you would have it. But what you will have is a bunch of information that you can pull out as needed. I hope that answered the question.
Thank you so much. All these questions have rolled in, so I think you're going to have to give drive-by quick answers first.
Okay. All right.
Until we figure out something else. So let's see here. Let's see. What is a good answer if I'm asked about why the nice egg lady was anonymous if this is all so wonderful?
I assume that means asked by the child and not asked by some other person.
Right. I'm guessing it's the child as well.
I think I would say something like, Well, first of all, that's not going to be a young child, for sure. But at some point, I think I might say, you know, that's how the system was at that time. And that's what we thought was best. But, you know, we learn as we go. And many people will say, if I had it to do again, I wouldn't do it that way. If that's not true for you, don't say it. But you could say, because that, you know, the system was set up to protect everyone's identity. You know, that's just the truth.
Sure. Okay. How do we talk to our child about egg donation and surrogacy? How does utilizing a gestational carrier impact this? We had an anonymous donor, but are in contact with our gestational carrier. Mm-hmm. And the child is a toddler right now.
Well, yeah, this is an example. This is kind of like adoption. You know, the gestational carrier is already a concrete human being. Her name is Sally, and we have a picture of her pregnant with you, et cetera. So it makes it much, much easier. And so it doesn't change it at all. The story is exactly as I just discussed. The difference is that when you get to the part about, you know, going to the hospital or meeting the child, you know, kids love stories about themselves. And so this is going to be the story that, you know, Sally called us and she said, it's time, and we ran to the hospital, depending on what the story is, and we saw you come out. So they're really, you know, sort of two separate stories, but it's all the story of how we became a family, and we became a family with the help of not just one woman, but two women.
Okay, that's great. Okay, on to the next question. Lauren asks, we have a 7-year-old own egg son and 2 younger children via egg donation. Should we talk to our older son separately, or should we talk to everyone at the same time?
Nope, we're all in this together. It's a family affair. Everybody okay. gets talked to at the same time, but of course they're going to understand different elements of it differently. The 7-year-old is obviously going to understand more, although not DNA yet. So I would say no. I would say if he has questions independently, if you're putting him to bed and he says, hey, Mom, you know, what's with this donor business, you can certainly talk to him. But I wouldn't necessarily isolate him and talk about it separately, no.
Okay. Okay, so again, what is your insight and advice to you that you have for talking to older siblings who were not conceived this way? This would be, egg donor would be secondary infertility. So they have older siblings that are genetically related to the parents, and the younger kids are via egg donation.
Well, I think I just answered that. You know, whether the child, the older child is 7 or they're 14, I think I just answered that. You know, if they're much older and they're really understanding DNA and what this means, you can certainly start talking to them during pregnancy, and you can tell them that you had a lot of help to bring these other children into the world and explain how you had help, and obviously they're going to understand it more. But again, when you take the mystery out of it and you just talk about how we became a family, then the story is that perhaps Dad and I were able to become pregnant with you very easily, and then we wanted to add to our family. Perhaps it's a second marriage. And at that time, it was very challenging, and we needed help. And, you know, if they're much older, they're going to understand what that help was. But it doesn't preclude all the other stuff. And in the meantime, you've got the little kiddie books that your older children are also going to look at and, you know, understand a great deal about.
Okay, great. Okay, so here's one of my favorite questions. I get asked this all the time, and I want to really hear what you have to say about this. What are your suggestions and thoughts about sharing with extended family who may not know? Initially, the thought was it should be up to the child to tell their story. Do you believe that as parents, we should be open before the child has a choice in telling their story? And how do you handle it if the child is upset about the donor conception?
Well, most children are not upset about donor conception. It's very rare. Those are really two very separate questions, and the second one is probably too complicated to address here. And again, it's very rare, and there's likely something else going on that's being manifested about egg donation, but it's not really about egg donation. The question about extended family is really a very personal decision. So you want to think about the information sharing in concentric circles. At the center of the circle is your child and medical professionals. And those are the people that we say are like non-negotiable. They really have to have the information. Medical professionals certainly to appropriately treat your child medically. And your child because all evidence indicates that it's best for families and children. And then outside of that are close friends and family. And outside of that are school teachers and classmates. And outside of that is somebody standing in the grocery store line with you. Most people find that it is easier for extended family to have that information when a child comes into the world, because immediately there are all kinds of comments about who an infant looks like. And that continues for several years until they really become their own person. And when family does have the information that a donor was used, it helps avoid the eye darting and the discomfort, the uncomfortable glances. And you can laugh about it. You can say, "Oh, really? They look like me? Ha ha ha." So in most situations, it's easier if family knows. Now, that doesn't mean they have to know when you get your positive beta. They don't even have to know when you're in your last trimester, unless you are 53 and it's probably obvious.
Okay.
But at some point after your child is born, it's probably just easier for you. The idea of your child being in control of that information is a very respectful point of view that comes out of adoption. The idea that adoption status really belongs to the child or the individual, and it's up to them to share. I personally don't think it's realistic or practical. And I think, you know, the reality is that parents do share this with other people, and they're not going to be able to hold on to it until a child decides to share it. I also think that there's something to making it so casual and so shared with respect for privacy boundaries for the family that it makes it a little bit more no big deal.
Okay.
So I think in some ways that protects the parents more than it does the child.
I would really tend to agree with that. I really would tend to agree. Okay, we have 7 minutes, and we are flooded with questions, and I wish we could keep you here for another 2 hours, but we
can't. I'll try to talk less.
That's okay. No, you're doing great. Okay, this is another question, Carol, I get at least twice a week. It's the one that breaks my heart. We know who our donor is, and she knows who we are. Although we made every effort to create an open relationship with her, she stopped communicating for unknown reasons. How and at what age do we disclose and share with our daughter that a door we tried to have open now may be closed?
Much later, probably adolescence. You know, I think what you do is answer the question with those exploration questions. You answer the question with a question. What do you think that would be like? Or what should we call her? And I think by the time a child is entering middle school, say, you know, 11, 12, 13, there are ways of talking about this that are very respectful about the donor without, you know, disparaging her. But I think by that time we can kind of say, you know, we really tried to stay in touch, but she chose not to do that, but maybe at some point in the future we'll be able to get back in touch.
Okay. Oh, here's another fun one. Do you think, Carol, talking to your children when they are babies is good for the practice, or are they actually absorbing that information?
Practice.
That's what I say.
Next.
I remember what you told me, practice, practice, practice. It'll come right off your lips, Marna, when he's older.
What they're absorbing, as I mentioned in the presentation, is the feeling. While you're holding them, you're feeding them, you're bottle feeding them, you're breastfeeding them, you're rocking them in the rocking chair, you're singing to them while you're telling this story. That's what they'll get. That's what they'll absorb.
Okay. How to handle family members that we are worried about disclosing to or finding out from our kids because of the kind of the people they are. We're worried that they may be judgmental or hurtful to our children.
Learning opportunities, learning opportunities, learning opportunities. Your kid comes home and says, Auntie Grace said you're not my real mommy. And you say, well, what do you think? And they say, well, I think you're my real mommy. You're my real mommy, aren't you? And you can say, I sure feel like your real mommy. What do you think? And they say, yeah, you're my real mommy. And you say, okay, so we're good, right? No matter what Auntie Grace said. So, you know, kids are going to hear all kinds of things about all kinds of things, and children are bullied for all kinds of reasons. And I just really think that if we clump how we created our family into our world at large, and we use that as an opportunity to say, well, what do you think about that? Then it's all good. And also, if we're in control of this information, the way we talk about it at home with our kids and they know they can come to us, there really isn't anything anybody else is going to say out there that's going to throw them. That's why we want to get ahead of it.
And be in control of that information.
By starting as early as possible.
Okay, so the very last question I'm going to give to you, we cannot have a webinar without you explaining this simple
okay.
You'll know when I tell you. So the advice I was given is that there is a difference between something that is private and secret.
Right.
So I haven't told everyone about the donation. Carol, how do you balance having the child tell everyone versus just the people that she or he are close to? So we have to hear from you to tell us about the difference between private and secret.
Thank you for asking that, whoever asked that, because I neglected to put that slide into the presentation. So private matters are things like how much money you made last year, how often you are intimate with your partner. You know, we close the bathroom door when we go in the bathroom. Secrets are things like bankruptcy, spousal abuse, infidelity, illegal activity. Secrets are always things that we're embarrassed or ashamed about, and secrets are secrets because we're afraid of what people will think of us if they knew. And if you remember those two categories, it will always help you determine what your intention is in either sharing or not sharing the story. So the person in the grocery store, that's just private information. You're not embarrassed about it, you're not ashamed, but there's really no value necessarily to this person knowing. But there's also not a lot of harm in them knowing at all. So if you think of your intention for sharing or not sharing, and the definitions of privacy and secrecy, it will really, really help you. My colleague Elaine Gordon says, privacy is not telling the woman in the grocery store line in front of you. Secrets is not telling your child.
And with that, we're going to end and wrap this up. It is 7:59. And I've got about 30 seconds of housekeeping. First of all, I just want to thank you. This was wonderful. I couldn't imagine kicking this webinar off without you. You've been my mentor, and you have been so helpful to thousands of people all over, helping them with telling their story to their kids and just navigating their way through the uncharted waters of egg donation. So thank you, Carol. Okay, so if you need further information, we are at www.pved.org. You can also reach me online at Marna, M-A-R-N-A, at pved.org. Our phone number is 503-987-1433. Help is just a few keystrokes away. We have an online forum. We have a great membership. We've got a secret Facebook group. And we are glad that you are here. And I cannot do this without saying thank you to Sue Taylor. She is one of our officers of our organization, and she helped put all of this together. And she's one of the wonderful people that has helped steer this project, and we just want to thank her. So on behalf of PVED, thank you, and good night.